Welcome to the Karamcast, episode 5.
Cinco.
Capítulo 5. Es el último grito de la moda.
Por favor. Es la verdad.
It's the full moon cast, actually.
I'm feeling it.
It's a big, fat old moon hanging up in the Los Angeles sky.
Yeah.
And we know what that means. It means KMS goes a little crazy.
Well, isn't it called, wouldn't you be considered a lunatic?
Yeah, pretty much. They say that artists and sociopaths tend to be affected by full moons. There's something about the chemical makeup in their brains. Let's talk about the chemical makeup of our bodies. I was reading this amazing book. I'm serious that this is one of the best books I've read in my life.
Pray do tell.
It's called The Omnivore's Dilemma, and it's a Northern Californian author who writes about what is the source of our food. He wanted to track back where our food comes from. He says in some cases it's really easy, but in some cases it's really hard. And the first chapter is about corn and how corn is this bizarre plant that is so adaptable that it's now completely tied to us as a species. In fact, if we weren't around, it would pretty much die out. And that there's 45,000 SKU numbers, which is the way you ring up a product, right?
Right.
There's 45,000 SKU numbers for corn products, byproducts. And the animals that we eat and the sugars that we ingest and everything at McDonald's is basically a corn byproduct. And we're these like walking corn people. So The Omnivore's Dilemma is this amazing book. And I highly recommend anybody who's listening to this show go out and find it. It was called one of the top 10 books by the New York Times Book Review. And it's amazing. He just says it becomes increasingly more difficult to figure out what the actual origination of the foods that we're eating are. And that the majority of the recognizable byproducts that they're made from is corn. And it's just, but I can't even explain why it's so good. One of the most interesting things he talks about is how grocery stores are laid out, that we walk into these places where now you can find durian fruit and dragon fruit and mangoes in the dead of winter. And there's this just seemingly endless bounty of items, and how when you walk in, you'll usually find the produce section first, and it's got morning dew being misted on it every 5 minutes. And
some places even have synthetic thunder.
They do?
Yeah, right before the spray happens. No, it freaked me out. I was like,
well, I believe it. And then you get further back into the more esoteric aisles when you start getting into canned goods and then just straight Twinkies. Like, what is the source of a Twinkie other than probably just corn byproducts? We don't quite make food out of petroleum stuff yet, but he gets into all of this. And then it reminded me of another book by Douglas Rushkoff called Coercion, in which he talks about environomics. And that was the idea that once you used to go to outdoor markets and so on, and you would buy your produce and whatever there, but eventually they figured out that if you could create an entire environment that would keep people inside, and more so, that would actually confuse people in terms of the way out, the direction in and out of the place.
Like Vegas.
Your sense of discombobulation would actually lead you to the comfort of familiar goods, and you would want to find that retail specialist, so-called, who would guide you to the safety of something that you need and that would fulfill your need and your sense of confusion. So there's an interesting link between those two books, and I guess that was part of what my exploration was. At the same time, I was reading two other really great books. One I mentioned a few podcasts ago. Neal Stephenson is coming out with a new book, and I didn't even know the name of it at the time. It's called Anathem, which is a combination of the word anthem and anathema. And it's about a clock that it's a society that's like super involved in their little gadgets. They've got these BlackBerry-like devices called Jijas. there's this gigantic millennium clock, and it rings once every 100 years, once every 1,000 years, and once every 10,000 years. And there's these monks that live inside of its walls, and the walls only open up whenever this thing rings. And there's the monks that come out every 100 years, and the ones that come out every 1,000 years, and whatever. And they have to make the decision whether to go out and stay out in the society or to return back within the walls. Very interesting book. Like I said, it's about 1,200 pages.
And these monks live that long, kind of like...
Yeah, it's okay. Another planet. It's a slightly different species than our own.
Okay.
And then the last book I want to mention is William Gibson's book, Spook Country, which...
I'm going to read next.
It's been out for a little while, but it's so engaging. His way of writing is this short staccato sentence structure. And the thing about William Gibson is when he first wrote Neuromancer on his typewriter in Vancouver some 25 years ago, he was writing about the internet that we know now. So he was writing about the far future, and he got it pretty, not just did he get it right, but he sort of outlined the terminology that was going to be used, the way we were going to feel about it. And then with every subsequent book he's written, he's actually come closer and closer to the present, where his last book, Pattern Recognition, was actually set maybe just a couple of years in the future. His newest book, Spook Country, is taking place right now, today. Yet his ability to distance himself from the subject just far enough makes where we are now seem even stranger than Neuromancer did back then. And he's referring to common everyday products that we use and things that we see. There's an artist in it who's created this way of using essentially like Google Maps and Google Earth to let you zoom in on things that took place and relive them. So as you put these glasses on and you walk by the Viper Room, you're actually seeing this boy face down on the sidewalk, and you realize it's River Phoenix. But now with these glasses on and these Google Earth satellite images, you're actually standing in the place with these actual images in front of you. And so wherever you go, you can see this history book of things that actually took place there in your eyeballs.
Wow.
And that's why it's called Spook Country.
Oh.
Really interesting premise.
How far along are you?
I kind of pick up one book, read a couple chapters, go to the next book. But I find that with good reading, one book will feed the subject matter of the next, and then that will feed it. And rather than keep it all, which is just the way that we are online, and it's the way that we play video games and watch TV. We kind of edit it ourselves, and we're these tastemakers, and we put together the pieces that we need to make sense of it. Which reminds me, here's another thing I wanted to say. So we have these little Amazon shops on all the blogs and on our podcast site. And at first I thought, well, this is kind of weird. We're offering products by a different company. We get a small commission if we make a sale, which
some of it's really cute though.
You know, and those things ideally are meant to, in the long run, help support our time and effort in putting these things together and cover our costs. They typically don't, but it's really not as simple as just putting up these products. I actually became okay with it because what I realized is what we're doing is we're being tastemakers. We're being curators.
Yeah.
We're going out into the seemingly boundless catalog that Amazon has, and we're saying this is really cool and this is really cool. And when you put this and this and this and this side by side, it actually makes a statement. Sure, it's all very retail-centric, but there is still a kind of a message to it. I mean, it's McLuhan. It's Marshall McLuhan's The Medium is the Message. But there is something to that. So if you check out our stores, our little Amazon virtual stores, you'll see that what's on each blog is supporting the content in each of those blogs. A lot of the books and films and games and
clothes
and all that stuff that we mention, you'll actually find in those little slideshow carousel things. So check them out.
I got the chance to pick out a couple things. And I picked out things that I would want.
Yeah, I kind of set you on fire. I said, here.
I couldn't stop.
Imagine you were on a crazy shopping spree.
And there I went.
At Amazon. And you picked the stuff you would want. And not you just totally ignored whatever
price it was.
It was just junk. Yeah.
I threw out the junk.
How have you been? We haven't had you on the show for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Everybody missed you like crazy.
I missed everyone like crazy.
We had two big episodes. One, we were talking about what it is like to live in the aftermath of a hurricane, and another one was our big music expose with Truffle Jones.
I listened to them both crying in my bed alone. Well, I'm just kidding.
Since all that, we've also put up a new blog, tasteodyssey.com, which is all about my love of cooking. Mm-hmm. Something that you're often the guinea pig for.
Yeah, and recently you've experienced the slow cooker, or I have experienced your slow cooking.
Yeah, slow cooking is this zen hobby because it's torture in a way. You have to smell, basically you put the ingredients in, you put the lid on, you put it on slow cook, and then all you can do is sit there and wait. You have to wait for like 8 hours. If you come back from the grocery store and you put all your ingredients in and you're super hungry, well, you're not going to eat your dinner.
Yeah, so you should just eat something else while you're slow cooking because it's absolute torture.
It's a bit like the blogs that I'm working on. You sort of have to put everything in and you want these immediate results. You want everybody to come flooding in and you want, you know, everything to rock and roll right away, but you have to sit there and wait for a while, and you just got to let it bake. You got to let it just chill.
For hours.
For a long time. But you know that at the end of it, there's going to be something amazing.
Yeah.
And life is a lot like that. And as we go through this crazy, very rocky time in the economy, it's the same thing. You got to just, you can't freak out. You got to know that things will
align
themselves. You got to be planting good seeds. If you're too worried about it and you're dropping all these fear bombs on yourself and on your life, then you probably will end up there. But if you put good stuff down, even in the tough times, then the tree will grow and you'll pick good fruit.
You got to be like a surfer. Those guys are brilliant in more ways than one. They ride that wave and they know every single energy that is coming out of the ocean. And at that moment, they're in tune with the waves. And I think that's a lot like life.
Yeah.
So those guys are shaman in my book. Shaman men. Epic.
Fail. Epic fail. No, I was with you.
You get what I'm saying.
I'm with you. I mean, constant change, you know.
That's something I would absolutely love to do, but I'm scared of the water.
Why?
Because I think creatures are going to eat my feet. I stepped on a sand shark once and I...
Oh, well, that's a reason enough.
I've never really gotten over it.
But the sand shark is no longer real.
No. I guess I could do it if I wore my Crocs.
Cognitive behavioral therapy is this thing that says you have to expose yourself to the things you fear the most. But here's the reason. When you've only had an experience with something once, then your brain's whole way of coping with that is to think that that must be the case every time. So you have to build the odds against the likelihood of that happening again. If you walk out into the street once and you get hit by a bus, you're going to be pretty scared of crossing the street. But if you cross the street 10,000 times and you only got hit once, the evidence suggests that that was a freak scenario.
What about that one guy who got hit with lightning literally 13 times and he eventually just killed himself because he was sick of getting hit by lightning?
You wrote a project or something about him?
Yeah, that freaked me out.
Well, here's the thing. You wrote a project about him because that was so completely unusual.
I know.
If it wasn't that special, then you wouldn't have been some grade schooler writing stories about it.
So the bottom line is I should probably take up surfing.
Bottom line is you probably won't get bitten by a sand shark the next time you go in the water.
Good to know.
Odds are.
We'll see.
Yeah. Essentially, what I wanted to get at was there's the new blog, tasteodyssey.com.
Recipes are on it, and you can subscribe to the recipes, which I did, and it was a apple-y macrobiotic recipe that you had.
There's a lot of macrobiotic stuff on there. I've always been a big fan of macrobiotics.
I love macro. I was introduced to it this summer, and it made me feel energetic and healthy. I baked something tonight in honor of your Taste Odyssey.
What did you make?
I made an apple crumbly kind of delicious treat.
Oh, this is in response to the sour cream apple pie I put up.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, macrobiotics, which were created by a Japanese man named George Osawa, is about balance in the spectrum.
The yin and yang.
Yeah, it's the yin and yang. And it's you're balancing heat and coolness and salt and sugar and
alkalizing, right?
Alkalizing and acidity. So it's really good for all kinds of disorders and bringing you into balance. And it's about communion kind of with the universe, but it's not really religious and it's not even that philosophic. It's something that makes you aware of what's coming in and how that relates to everything else. So if you have cravings, it's because there's too much of something in your system. If you're craving a lot of fat, junk food, or a lot of sugar or saltiness, it's because there's an imbalance. So macrobioticism helps you to correct that. And actually, in a future podcast, I want to speak to Kimberly Snyder, who is a raw food specialist and also has launched this anti-aging face cream that's made from acai and goji berries and all this other stuff. And apparently, it's quite amazing. But she's got a great blog. And
I want to lather that ish on my face.
I've tried the raw food thing. I don't necessarily agree with it because I think that it puts too much of a strain on the body. Food needs to be slightly broken down for all the nutrients to get into your system. And when you're eating raw all the time, your metabolism is actually working too hard to break down the husk of the cells. But I'm interested in hearing what she has to say about it. And maybe she can shed some more light on this for me.
Raw food diet is basically uncooked vegetables.
Yeah, it's a vegan diet. And I have been exposed to some top international raw food chefs just because I've been in Los Angeles and I've had the opportunity. I've had everything from jalapeno pepper raspberry smoothies to the most delicious desserts and just things that are beyond the imagination, flavors that are amazing. When you're on a raw food diet, you lose a lot of weight and you may also become very lucid and so on, but you have to sustain a pretty strict order, because as macrobioticism would teach you, whenever you go in a certain direction, you know, if you're eating macro for a long time, which is, you can actually eat white fish and there's a lot of stuff from the sea. There's a lot of kelps and algaes and seaweed because those things tend to have 1,400, 2,000 times the amount of vitamin C and potassium and as normal fruit like oranges and all of that might. But if you suddenly start drinking a can of Coke in the middle of a macro diet, it's like dropping a nuclear weapon on your system. You know, you've created this delicate equilibrium and you can't just jump off. I mean, it's not going to kill you, but you're going to feel the effect.
Yeah.
If you believe that eating macro is like eating what's local and to your environment, then you could also argue that eating McDonald's cheeseburgers and drinking Coke is going to be okay because you're a product and a response to your environment. That's why when you're in that, you know, when you're in those kind of slumps and you're eating just a lot of junk, you roll with it. When you're really hungover, you go and you get a greasy breakfast. There's this balance effect because you need all the sodium to make up for it and the depletion and all of that. Anyways, Taste Odyssey touches on all of those things. And it's really good for diabetics. It's good for, I've seen, you know, my own members of my family change moods drastically after a good macro meal. And it's interesting stuff. So I want to get more and more into that. I guess that's about it for this week. If you like this podcast, please visit us on iTunes and make sure you subscribe to the Karam Cast. You can also visit the website. Feel free to write to us, info@karamcast.com. I'm also going to be putting up that phone number that I promised so we can start taking calls from our listeners. And thanks again for visiting us.